you for joining us for the Preceptor Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Ryan. And today we have a returning guest from a while back, Dr. Kirsten Hansen. Kirsten, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Kirsten Hansen. I teach at Manchester University in the pharmacy program. I am a pharmacist. My history is in ambulatory care pharmacy, but I am currently a full-time faculty member where I teach in our hands-on clinical skills lab. And so I do a lot of hands-on stuff. I'm also the inclusion and wellness coordinator for the campus. So I wear a couple of different hats.
And Kirsten, your previous location that where you were practicing was at a clinic that served a lot of underserved patients, correct?
Yeah, throughout my whole practice, I've always worked with underserved patients. And so that is a passion of mine. And it has been like that since I was in pharmacy school.
Just the reason I bring that up is because that's kind of central to one of the reasons we're talking to you today, because the reason that we wanted to talk to Kirsten today was there was an article that came out in December. It was actually in U.S. News and World Report. So this is a little different than normal articles that I bring to the table because usually they're not as mainstream. But it talked about that there are almost 13 million Americans who skipped medication doses last year just due to cost alone. I think as pharmacists, we know this happens. But the number was honestly larger than I thought it would be. So who does this issue seem to affect the most?
Sure. So the article was interesting, and that is a big number. And I think what's interesting about that number is if you read it, it's not just skipping a dose. These are people who are skipping filling a prescription. So if we take into account the people that miss a dose, I mean, it's a, you know, of course, much, much higher. But just that that many Americans are skipping filling a prescription is really concerning. And so in the article, they talk a little bit about how this affects specifically Medicare patients. But I dug a little bit deeper, and I will tell you honestly, I didn't go super deep into literature, but I found some data from the Kaiser Family Foundation that was from October of 2021. And the people that they identified as really having the most difficulty affording their prescriptions were people who have more than four medications, people who have serious health conditions, and household income less than $40,000 per year. I don't think that surprises us. Of course, the more prescriptions you have, the more costly it's going to be, the more challenging it is to afford it. If you have serious health conditions, you may have limitations in how you can work, and so the income that you're earning, and then a household income of less than $40,000 per year. And keep in mind, that's a household income. That is a relatively low income. And so you could see how it would be difficult when you're having to make decisions about whether or not you pay the bills, your mortgage, and those types of things versus an inhaler that may cost $200. So you can understand why these groups specifically have the most challenge. You know, I really thought that we would see Medicare patients be an age group or demographic that reported higher difficulty affording their prescriptions. But in this data published by the Kaiser Family Foundation, they found actually that there wasn't a statistical or a significant difference between the different age groups that they looked at. And surprisingly, the highest difficulty affording prescriptions was in the 30 to 49 age range. So I think for us to keep that in perspective, that sometimes we think about geriatric patients or patients who may qualify for Medicare as perhaps being some that have difficulty, but if we think about insurance coverage for that population, it's pretty high. And so even though 20 to 30% of the groups reported difficulty affording prescriptions, but we're really seeing people with the more medications they have, the more health conditions they have, and then lower income, which of course does make a lot of sense. And then in that same data, just to kind of round out, not just affording prescriptions, but about 30% of patients reported not taking their medication as prescribed over the past 12 months, which I don't think any of us as pharmacists are prescribed or are surprised by that information. But there was another study that was published in March of 2021 where they actually looked at Medicare patients. And so here I said, you know, Medicare patients may not have a specific disadvantage as compared to other age ranges, but they looked at Medicare patients and there were about 1,600 patients in the study. And at the start of the study, about 22% reported that they had non-adherence issues related to cost. But if you looked at the end of the study, which was only 15 months, they found that closer to 50% reported having cost difficulty issues. So even these snapshot data that we get about a 20 to 30% difficulty affording prescriptions, I think it's probably quite a bit higher if we look at a longer period of time.
That's really good information, Kirsten. I'm honestly thinking about a ton of things, but we as pharmacists do know that adherence is hard enough with someone who has plenty of money to afford medications. So when we're thinking about our pharmacists in the community pharmacy setting, how can they help patients who are having trouble paying for these medications with their adherence?
You know, and that's a great question. And I would say the majority of our frontline pharmacists in the community pharmacy are doing this on a daily basis and probably don't even think about it. But I think it's sometimes we can get caught up in, you know, filling prescriptions and the numbers that we have to meet and the metrics and things like that, which is a whole nother podcast topic, I would imagine, if you haven't already had that one. Yeah, I think one of the things that we can do as pharmacists is we can make sure that we're listening to patients and what they say. When they come in to pick up prescriptions, they may make comments about the cost and we may blow those off, kind of laugh a little bit about that because we hear them so frequently and they're just kind of par for the course when you're dispensing these expensive medications. But I think we can also educate our technicians to be listening for those types of things too, and to pay attention to that, because patients may not loudly complain about it, but the subtle things they say to us or the little things we may see if they're putting back different items or if they're only picking up some of the prescriptions, I think those are the most important things we can do to identify patients who are at risk of not being adherent because of cost. So once we've identified patients who are at that risk, I think, you know, of course, the most obvious is switching from brand to generic, which I think is just inherent nowadays, and being a healthcare provider and filling prescriptions. I think beyond that, though, thinking about different classes, and while it contributes to our workload, if we have to reach out to the pharmacist or to the physician or the prescriber, I should say, to get different medications, I think that's something that we can think about. Are there different classes that we can use to fill that would be less cost effective? And I will say, even for myself, just recently, I am on a brand name antidepressant that has a unique mechanism of action and it works really well. And so I'm hesitant to use something else, but it's $350 every month. And I, of course, can afford that. I don't like affording that, but I have the means to afford that. And so I talked to my prescriber and I said, you know, I'm okay with paying this, but it would be great if I could get something cheaper. And she said, oh, well, let's just get you the next strength up and we'll have you cut them in half. And like, it had never even crossed my mind. And it was significantly like $200 cheaper just to go up a tablet strength and to cut it in half. That may not be an option for all medications. It may not be an option for all patients because they may not have the cognitive ability to do that or the physical ability to do that. But for me, that saved me $150 just by doing that. And I think sometimes as pharmacists, we may not necessarily think of all of those ways that we can have cost savings. And then, of course, thinking about combination products too, because even a $5 copay to someone like a pharmacist who makes good income, a $5 copay may seem pretty small. But if a patient can have one $5 copay versus two $5 copays, that could be the difference between being able to afford their bus pass or being able to afford part of their child's meal plan for school and those types of things. So I think we need to really be conscious of that our patients may be coming from a very different socioeconomic background than we are. And of course, everyone's really familiar with the cost savings programs such as GoodRx. I think that's where every pharmacist and healthcare provider probably goes to first, but there are some other resources out there too. RxAssist.org, NeedyMeds.org. Those are all resources for coupons, for finding manufacturer discounts, to see if we can get, for example, as I mentioned before, I'm on this antidepressant and I found a coupon that knocked $100 off my prescription. And so again, even for patients who may not have difficulty affording their prescriptions, getting those discounts for patients can really help them. And then finally, the last thing I think that's really important for us to do is to educate patients about how to navigate their own prescription insurance formularies. You know, that's pretty scary. At Manchester, in our lab course, we do that quite a bit. And the students have some difficulty navigating it. And they're educated students, but actually digging into the formulary can be really confusing, especially if you have a lower health literacy. So at the very least, reminding patients that they have access to their own formularies. And if we have the ability, the time, or our technicians, or our API students, or our IPI students have the time to show patients how to access that information, I think that that's really an important thing that we can do as pharmacists.
And I think sometimes we think that this is just a community pharmacy problem, but this is, I can think of specifically times in the hospital that hospital pharmacists can make a difference here. So can you talk a little bit about those?
Sure. And, you know, Sarah, I would love to have you chime in on this because it's been a long time since I've practiced in a hospital, but when I think about this, I think about, again, listening to patients. If we're in there talking to them, if we're educating them about their prescriptions and they mention anything about cost, you know, listening to that, hooking them up with resources such as the social worker in the hospital to be able to make sure that they have insurance to get them enrolled for Medicaid or Medicare or those types of things. But I think also not just thinking about what we have on our hospital formulary, because hospital formulary is such a part of being a hospital pharmacist, but that doesn't mean that that's going to help the patient get the medication when they get home. So if we are able to look at their formulary and see what's covered under their formulary, we may have better adherence once they get out. Now, our community pharmacists are going to do a lot of that work as well for us. But if you have a patient who's ill, been in the hospital for an extended period of time, they go to the pharmacy and they were prescribed what was on the hospital formulary, but it's not on their insurance formulary, and they're told they have to wait another half hour while the pharmacist figures a workaround, that may be enough to deter that patient from picking up that prescription. And we've lost an opportunity there of adherence, which of course we know can result in morbidity and mortality increases. And so if the hospital pharmacist can do some of that in advance, that's going to help our patients be more adherent once they get to the community pharmacy.
Well, the instance that I was thinking about is, I just shudder to think about the number of patients that we start on like PPIs or famotidine in the hospital, and then they don't get discontinued. And so really being vigilant when you're doing transitions of care, or, you know, somebody's getting discharged and you're helping write their prescriptions, or wherever you are in that process, making sure like, well, were they on famotidine before they came? No. Why did we start famotidine? Was it just because, you know, they've been here a week and they were in the ER, or they were in ICU? We probably don't need to send them home with this. And so really kind of being vigilant about when you're doing transitions of care work.
Yeah, I think, I mean, all of these instances and ideas are fantastic and worthwhile. And I think every pharmacist probably needs a social work minor, honestly, to do a great job. But I want to transition from that individual focus maybe to a more global focus. So is there a way that the United States as a whole can address some of these concerns?
Well, you know, it's funny, no one's asked me, and if they would have asked me, I would have fixed this problem decades ago. So I, of course, have the perfect answer for that.
I'm so glad we had you on.
All right, this is all it takes. We're going to change the world here just for this answer. Obviously, this is a big systemic issue that I don't have the answer to. But, you know, looking into things and sort of thinking about the way things are, I think the biggest thing is looking at drug pricing reform, which I think makes sense to everybody. So that can happen on a couple of different levels. One, what is the individual paying at the pharmacy? So that comes down to the healthcare plan. So being involved in advocacy and communicating with the people who make decisions about healthcare costs and expenses and insurance programs at that level can be really important. So what is the co-payment that a person is paying? Looking at the pharmaceutical prices, there was this publication from the Commonwealth Fund that had some really good ideas of how we can help limit pharmaceutical prices. So the first is through centralized price negotiation. If we think about the VA and the Department of Defense, for example, the DOD, they do a really good job with this because they buy such large volumes, they can negotiate with manufacturers and get better prices. And this article from Commonwealth Fund said that sometimes they can pay up to 50% less than what a community pharmacy might pay to purchase the same medications. So if we could leverage that centralized price negotiation as a country, or even as a part of the country, or